This is Bump and Beyond with Yolandi Becker, the show about pregnancy and babies. 101.9 megahertz of life.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. Yes, you are on 101.9 Chai FM, and this is Bump and Beyond with me, your host, Yolandi Becker. And as always, we are talking parenting. One of my favorite times with my family is meal times. And I don't know, I think it was one of those mom goals I set out for myself. Even before my children were born, I always just wanted them, when they're like out of the house, to miss my cooking. So, and even when I went away, what was it now, a month ago or so, for a couple of days, and it literally was like that, where my kids were like, we don't really miss you that much, but we miss your cooking quite a lot. So I feel already I'm quite accomplished in my goal of that, making them remember. I also really do love cooking. I also sometimes cook with my children, but also I really love our meal times together. So I do make a lot of effort with breakfast, especially, and with dinner. Lunch, we are not always all together, obviously. So it doesn't always happen that way. But breakfast definitely, and dinner is a very big event, I feel. It's not just about the actual food I'm making, but we're spending time together. And as I told my husband, I'm squeezing every little bit of time I'm getting out of my children, because there's so much of their lives that I'm not a part of anymore, because they're now 12 and 14. I'm telling you this because I want you to have long game with our conversation today, because feeding your child and having these opportunities to still spend time with them, and having those opportunities where they say, I miss your cooking and I miss my mom's cooking. You don't have to be a great cook or anything like that, I don't feel, to be spending time together. But it starts literally from when they come out, this journey of feeding. And that's what we're a little bit talking about today, in a different way, because we want to talk a little bit about those struggles. And there is a lot. I think this is the single most stressful thing for a new mom, is the feeding. It starts, like I said, literally from when baby comes out, you're feeding. And even though breastfeeding is often called, it's natural, and it's not necessarily easy always. And for some moms, I can remember something very silly, is that I remember I struggled to hold Oscar in different ways, because they're so floppy in the beginning. I couldn't even give my baby to Stefan, my husband. I had to put him down and he had to pick him up. And yes, after a couple of weeks, it probably changed, but initially that was an issue. And this, obviously, how you hold your baby can have an impact on how you're breastfeeding and how you're feeding. And that's what it's not necessarily just breastfeeding. We want to talk about those concerns parents have, because it is a very big source of stress and things like that. But you know, babies spit up, they have constipation, they have reflux, and it's difficult to know what is normal, what is not normal. And I want to talk about these reflux, intolerances, and constipation. And as always, I bring in the experts to talk about this. And joining me again today is dietitian Deborah Jacobson. Hi, Deborah, how are you today?
Hello, I'm well. How are you?
Just fine. I hope you're also excited about talking about this topic, because again, I feel it is a stress factor for lots of parents.
Yes. I mean, I work with children and babies most of the time, and I get a lot of joy when I can see I've made a difference. I've helped, you know, parents feel more comfortable and more confident. And I think that's the big part of it. It's parents learning about their children's cues, how to read them, how to read the signs, how to fix the problems. And it's a really big part of parenting, and it's nurturing. Yep. And it's very rewarding. Yeah.
No. And again, I told this story about where it becomes, what happens with the feeding eventually. And I feel these small things that you're doing in the beginning adds to that journey of where you're going towards. But many parents hear these terms that we've talked about, things like colic and reflux, intolerance, constipation. Can you maybe briefly explain what each of these mean and how they are different?
Okay, sure. Well, first of all, colic. This is a very difficult one because there's actually no reason for it. Nobody understands why it is what it is. There are a couple of definitions of it, but it's something that is actually not harmful for your child because they land up growing well. They're happy. Well, they will become happy, up to probably about 5 months. That's normally really the period of time where it can persist until. And it's crying, it's persistent crying for long periods of time and inconsolable crying and really stressful for parents. And it does happen and it's very, very stressful. So the cause of that, no one really knows. And that could be gas, and it could be immaturity of the gut, and it could be immaturity of the nervous system. But it's this inconsolable crying that's very, very stressful. But the good news is that children are developing well, and they will become happy, and nothing's going to affect them in the long term. Then the other one is reflux, or spitting, or positing, which is very, very common in newborns. And it's due to an immaturity of the digestive, well, the gut. So there's a sphincter on the top of the stomach that connects the stomach to the esophagus called the lower esophageal sphincter. And it's a muscular ring that, if it's immature, if it hasn't developed properly, then it's like there's nothing to stop the food from going up again once it's gone down. So that's what happens with reflux. Food goes up and down. And this is normally resolved also, but it could be resolved by up to like 1 year old. And it's also just, it's an immaturity. So that's normal reflux. Then there's intolerance as well. That's a whole topic on its own.
True.
intolerances, the most common one is caramel protein allergy, or food allergy, with the most common being cow's milk or egg or nuts. And that has quite a severe effect on the child, and it can result in failing to thrive. It can affect various systems in the body, from the gut, from the breathing, from the skin to the skin. And that does need to be diagnosed and dealt with. Then, yeah, and then there's constipation that you mentioned a bit earlier too. You don't see it that much in newborns, in infants, especially breastfed infants. But the way in which we diagnose or we look at constipation in newborns is not so much the frequency of passing a stool like you would as an adult. It's more to do with the texture, or and it's if it's little sort of coral keys, little sort of bean, sort of hard stools, and it's hard and it's sore, that is the constipate that is constipation in infants. So some babies will pass a stool 10 times a day, and some babies will pass a stool once in a week, and they're absolutely fine. So it also just shows you how different children are, and that's also a very important point to talk about, because you can't compare your child to other people, even to their siblings. It's everyone is different, and so reading the cues of how your child is doing is a very important skill, especially for a new mom.
This is Bump and Beyond with Yolandi Becker, the show about pregnancy and babies. 101.9 megahertz of life.
Yes, if you've just joined me, you are on 101.9 High FM, and this is Bump and Beyond with me, your host, Yolandi Becker. And today we're talking about infant eating issues, feeding issues. We're talking about, and I mean, it's broad. And I think with each one topic, we could actually have a separate show about it. And maybe in future we will. If you have any questions, my guest today is dietitian Deborah Jacobson, who has a special interest in pediatrics and she has a master's in nutrition. If you have any questions or comments about nutrition, maybe some struggles you had feeding or maybe reflux, anything like that, please share with us on WhatsApp on 061 895 1019. 061 895 1019. Please also remember that this show and all of my shows are available on hivem.com for you to go listen to. As you were going through those things of reflux, I also, it's always I'm reminiscing about my own children. And again, they're both now fine, both adventurous eaters. They love eating, they're super foodies, all sorts of things. 12 and 14, it takes a while sometimes. But my son had severe reflux. Like he had projectile vomiting reflux. I think all babies, and Deborah mentioned it, has a form of reflux because of an immature development. I think my daughter was not, she didn't have reflux. And I mean, as you were talking about constipation as well, and some babies have 10, my son also, he fed, he pooped, he fed, he pooped, he fed, he pooped. So he had like 8 to 10 diapers. My daughter was not that regular, but it was really, yes, I remember that was your. It's funny how you forget those things, and how much it costs you and how much poop you have to clean. Fun times, but constipation, I called that. My children didn't have that. But that is something I have to say, though, that one of the most common things that moms, when I assist them with sleep, they often tell me with their smaller children that they look very, they suspect constipation because their child looks so uncomfortable when they're pooping. And then I'm always just reminding them, please go lay down and try to poop and see how comfortable that is. So I think generally it is like you said, just where they're at that sometimes adds to this idea that they might be uncomfortable, but yeah, there's ways to do about it. Anyway, again, son had reflux. Daughter didn't have anything that I could remember with regards to that. But how common are these feeding struggles? Do you see that all the time, or is it
Well,
not
it can
that common?
occur, I think in the literature it's 25 to 50%. So it's quite common. I mean,
Yeah.
it's and most of it is attributed to immaturity that needs to develop and they need to outgrow.
No. And I mean, at one stage, I feel it's less now, but I remember that every second baby had reflux about 5 years ago or 3 years ago. And I think it's not that common anymore. But reflux is often blamed for feeding difficulties. And you have mentioned a couple of things with regards to reflux. I'm saying this on purpose. I remember literally, like I said, I want to say 3, 4 years ago, every second baby was on Nexium, for reflux. And again, a form of reflux is normal. Babies do spit up. Okay. But it is often, but what are the signs for normal reflux, spitting up and stuff like that? And when does it become something that requires further assistance?
I think like anything with babies, if there's a lot of pain, so if there's inconsolable crying, that is always a concern and that's always a reason to go to a doctor. Normally children do get fussy and they get irritable and but you normally learn what it is and they can be comforted. But if it becomes inconsolable and you can see there's a lot of pain, it's always a good reason to go and just have that checked out. If projectile vomiting is also a good reason to go and see a doctor as well. It can be like nothing or not necessarily not necessarily serious, but it can also be serious. So anything unusual like that, go and have a look at. Just don't hesitate. And also the third thing is with reflux, sometimes you can't actually see it. So there isn't obvious vomiting, there isn't obvious positing. The the milk content just goes up and down, up and down, up and down the esophagus without actually going out the mouth. And because it's acidic, it can burn. It's really sore. So pain is a big sign, and also failing to thrive. So if you have a sore throat, you're not going to want to eat. So if you have severe reflux like that, and it's really burning, and you've got esophagitis, or you're not going to want to drink. So then failing to thrive, or not gaining weight, or staying the same weight is also a reason to go. That's why I think just generally as parents, it's always important to look at growth every month, take the weight, or make sure that it's plotted on the growth chart so you can see the trend. And that will give you enormous amounts of comfort for anything, not only feeding problems, but just how is my child doing? It's a very important indication of health.
And on the note now, personally, again, with my son, with regards to, to the reflux. And I mean, I have to say that I think I actually added to his projectile. He was gaining weight, there was nothing. But, and I'm telling this story to share that I'm not always perfect, because I'm definitely not. And I think sometimes it can give the impression that I know what I'm talking about because I have this show. And also, I want to share it because I was given the wrong information, I feel, and that added to some stress. So, a lactation consultant actually told me when my baby was born that I have to feed 20 minutes for each feed. And that kind of got stuck in my head, that's 20 minutes. And my son was an exceptionally good sucker
So you had too
and
much. If you
drinker.
overfeed, that's what can happen.
And that exactly that is that I was stuck on this 20 minutes, and he could finish a feed within 5 to 10 minutes from the beginning, which is was the opposite. My daughter was a grazer. She loved being on the poop like permanently, but my son wasn't. So I actually think, and that's why he was growing and he was fine, but I was actually kind of forcing these feeds, and then he was obviously eating it. And that was, I'm again sharing it because just because your baby's not feeding for 20 minutes does not, there is no time limit on the amount of, or time on the feeding. Again, I feel like Deborah said, the biggest thing is your baby gaining weight? And that's what you have to keep an eye on.
And if they're full, you can see if they're full, like don't force it. You know, like
Yeah, unlike
some
me.
children will suck, they'll finish a meal in 5 minutes. It's unbelievable how efficient they can be. Like when I had my twins, actually, they like the one was really quick and the one was very slow, and it was amazing to see the difference. But so everyone's different, so read the cues of your children. And sometimes I think if you're using a formula, sometimes the descriptions, instructions on the formula, they encourage you to have way more than you really need to. I mean, that's just a general thing I'm saying out there.
Yeah. But I
So
mean,
I'm
that
not
is
saying.
also, that is a good point. I know that as well, because I breastfed for quite a long time. And by the time I started formula, I was like, huh? How can it be this much more? And that wasn't what was necessary. If you've just joined me, you're on 101.9 High FM, and this is Bump and Beyond with me, your host, Yolandi Becker, and we are talking, your feeding struggles with small babies, those common ones, things like reflux, intolerances, and also your constipation, things like that. As always, I do want you to be part of the conversation. So if you have any questions for my guest, dietitian Deborah Jacobson, you can of course WhatsApp us on 061-895-1019. We would love to answer your questions. But you were mentioning that if you're wondering, you should be going to a doctor. And I feel the day and age, unfortunately, that we live in, and I mean, I'm on so many moms' WhatsApp groups, and the amount of poop I see on a weekly basis is not normal. And I feel that that's like lots of the time, food intolerances is discussed online. And again, the moms are sending pictures of the poop, and I'm not sure how I feel about it. because it shouldn't. You shouldn't be, if you're wondering, you should rather get an expert to help you. But what do you feel is some of the most common intolerances that you see and then the symptoms that parents will notice?
Well, the reflux or the positing, you know that's a common one. If a child has got an allergy, it is more serious because they can develop really bad eczema, or they can have diarrhea or constipation or bloating. They can also develop respiratory issues. So those are the ones where we have to start thinking about eliminating or changing things. And I'm a firm believer that it's important not to change or take things out unless you really need to, because babies don't have a big variety of food that they can have. And now if you're taking something out like milk, it's a very big decision, because now how are you going to replace all the things that you've taken out? And a big part of what I do as a dietitian is I actually teach parents to put food back in their children's diet.
Yeah.
Because I find a lot of the time people do self-diagnose. They think, oh, we really think that this is the problem or that is the problem based on whoever or whatever I've read, and take things out. And you know, it's a big decision to take things out. You do need to go and get professional help to see how, if you are now missing anything that you've taken out.
No. And I mean, especially, I mean, taking out, I also think sometimes moms can underestimate what includes, especially when we talk now about things like having a cow's milk protein allergy. Taking cow's milk completely out of your diet is very difficult, especially if you're breastfeeding. And as a mom, you want to cut that out. I think moms don't realize how many things actually include. So you're thinking you're cutting it out and that's the issue. And you're not actually cutting it out. And it also takes a long time to get out of your system.
Not so long. Just a couple, not even a day or so.
It
doesn't take a long time to, well, you're talking about breastfeeding and cutting out milk. Doesn't take a long time. The thing about cutting out milk is the mom must also now realize she's cutting that out of her diet. Now, what is she going to do to replace what she's missing? Calcium, various minerals, protein sources. So that's also something you need to get help with, just to make sure you're on the right path. And what I find important is it's quite hard to diagnose these, sort of like specifically cow milk protein allergy. It's very difficult. It's not like you can go and have one test and this is it. It's difficult to interpret. And the best way to see how your child is tolerating is having the food and then seeing how they react to it.
Yeah.
So if you're gonna start experimenting with taking sort of cow's milk out, you must do it for a temporary time and see if there's an improvement. If there's an improvement, then sure, that's a good thing. But if there isn't an improvement, then you must go back. You must go back to how it was before. And so you would need guidance as to how to do that.
No. Another thing I commonly see with moms when it comes to feeding with small babies is also changing, because there's so many formulas out there.
Yeah.
You know, and then if they suspect something, then they're very quick to get these anti-colic ones and the anti and going on to a soy-based one or something like that. And moms are very quick to change formula. Or also, okay, but before we get that, let's first do that one.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, if the child is on a formula and the mom thinks, oh, maybe this will be better, maybe that will be better. My experience is if you change the formulas too much, eventually your child's going to just reject everything. So try not to change. Change if there's a good reason to do it.
Yeah.
It's always best to use normal standard infant formulas based on breast milk. Okay, that's where it comes from. It's based off breast milk, and no one can argue that breast milk is what we should all strive to give. So, for instance, lactose is a very big part of breast milk. So, if you're going to be going on to a formula that doesn't have any lactose in it, it's quite a big thing you're taking out that would have been in breast milk. So, But some people might need that. But what I'm saying is try not to make those great radical changes unless you really have to. Or if you're going to try for a short while. If there's no difference, then just go back to what's ever closest to breast milk. And those are your standard formulas, your standard formulas that are not those, not fancy.
How long should you I mean, if you're going on to a formula, how long does it take for your baby to get used to the formula?
Well, that's a good
Their gut
question
to
because
adjust.
some people think it's just one feed. It's not. It can take a week to get used to, even up to 2 weeks to get used to. So it's like trying a new food. So with a growing, developing child who's like immature, they have to develop the skill to be able to process the new food. So it takes some time.
Okay. Yeah, no, I wanted to also mention that. Another thing that for me that I also see when it comes to formula and that I wanted to mention before, but I feel it's a different discussion, is that sometimes a pediatrician would then recommend like an anti-colic or something, one of those specialized milks when the baby's really small. And then the parents just never change. And then you're like,
Yes,
I'm seeing the
going
mom when
back,
it's like 11 months already. And I'm like, and they're
yes.
still on this specialized milk. And I'm like,
Yes.
I am very sure it's not necessary
Yes,
anymore.
I understand that. And those are the more expensive formulas as well. But I think I understand how parents will think, okay, well, this is working and it's always been working. So why should I change? I'm not going to change because it's working. So I understand that too. But just be cognizant of the fact that maybe you might not need that special formula and you might be through that problem and be able to go back. Yeah.
And I mean, again, also, I feel this is a question also, because obviously you're going from, if your child is now a newborn to 11 months, you're going once a month or something for a checkup, either at your nurse or at your pediatrician, and you're weighing your baby and things like that. This is, I feel, a must ask question that should be a standard if you are on a formula, especially if you're on a specialized formula, to ask, hey, is it okay to still have this formula? Should I still be on this? Should I be changing the formula? Because also sometimes parents forget that the formula also obviously changes as your baby gets older, from like a 0 to 6 months, and then there's a 6 to 8 month. I don't even know what it is anymore. But also, from what I know, it's also better to change a formula if you have like I don't know, you're on, I don't even, I can't even think of a Lula or whatever. You want to stay on the same brand of formula when you're going to the normal one again. It's also beneficial, right?
Yes, because it's got the same sort of building blocks, you know. Absolutely. You stay within that. That makes sense. You stay
That
within that same
range.
range.
Yes.
This is Bump and Beyond with Yolandi Becker, the show about pregnancy and babies. 101.9 megahertz of life.
Yes, you are on 101.9 High FM, and this is Bump and Beyond with me, your host, Yolandi Becker. Where have you been? You've missed most of the show. Luckily for you, this show and all of my shows are available as a podcast for you to go listen to on highfm.com afterwards. So don't despair. We've got such a great variety of different topics that we have covered on parenting. So it is really wonderful. So please go check it out. Go share it with your family. Go share it with your friends, so that everyone can get the benefit of this great library of topics on parenting. If there's something specific you would like me to cover, please do send us an email at info@highfm.com. We would love to know what you want us to talk about because we want this show to be relevant. My guest today is Deborah Jacobson, dietitian, specializes in pediatrics. And we've had a great conversation. I feel very practical things that we've been speaking about when it comes to feeding issues with smaller babies. Again, Deborah, you mentioned earlier that like a big thing is that you want to check that your baby is thriving and growing. But how can feeding challenges affect a baby's growth, their sleep, their overall development? And what should parents be monitoring?
So the monitoring, just always monitor weight, regardless if your child's happy or not. And that will give you an indication of how well you're doing, how well the baby's doing. What the things that could happen is you could the excessive feeding issues, if there's a problem with getting enough food in, the child might not grow very well. And that's a it's always a concern for infants specifically.
No.
And in terms of like any kind of intolerance, they'll just be very uncomfortable, and it'll be very difficult. And it becomes a real issue in the home with the parents and the kids. And there's a lot of stress and there's a lot of turmoil within the family, which is really upsetting to see.
No. As always, I always say life is not meant to be done alone, and we are lucky to have people like Deborah in our community to reach out to help if you're wondering about that. Deborah, as always, it has been wonderful having you on the show. Before you go, though, where can people find you if they want to reach out?
Oh, okay. I work at Garden City in the mornings. I'm mainly in the wards, but I also see patients there too, outpatients. And also I have my rooms in the orchards area.
Ah, great. Thank you so much for joining me, Deborah. Until next time, I look forward to it. On that note, as always, I am joined by the Dis-Chem clinic manager, Lizelle Fourie. Hello, Lizelle. How are you today? Oh, Lizelle, you're on mute. I hope you know
Sorry.
that.
Good and
I'm just fine. We were just talking about feeding issues with small babies. And Deborah, throughout the show, was reiterating the fact that if you're concerned, you have to check your baby's weight. And of course, Dis-Chem Baby Cl City Clinics do just that.
yeah, exactly.
How often is it necessary to go to the clinic? How often can you go? Can you go on a daily basis?
I don't think it's very productive to go on a daily basis. I think that would make people stress a bit more. But definitely, we check it at their 3 day visit with us, and then we see them again before their 6 weeks one, and then on their 6 weeks one. Definitely, if a mom thinks there's problems, we have to do it more often, and then we usually do it weekly. And I do think it's a very sensitive subject. I mean, my little girl was very tiny. She was premature, and I had this obsession with her picking up weight. And I went to so many different doctors and dietitians, and our pediatrician was very kind to me. And she said also to me, just relax. You know, if these things are fine, and she showed me, then we don't have to worry. And I'm a nurse myself, but you forget that when you have your own little one. But I do think it's very necessary that we handle it with care and with kindness, because it is a sensitive subject for mothers. It feels like a failure, and it shouldn't be like that.
Yes, but I mean, it is also, and I spoke about it earlier, is that sometimes, I mean, there's such an information overload when it comes to feeding. And also, it's a contentious issue, obviously. I mean, from the beginning, like, are you breastfeeding or not? Are you from, you
Yes.
know, there's like lots of these type of things where you're like, if you can't do the one, then you feel judged by it. So it's also, and then also, is my baby growing? Because it's literally almost the only thing you have to do in the beginning is get them to
Yes.
grow. So it's absolutely understandable that
Yes.
it can be a stress factor for parents. And I, with both my children, I can remember that it was, and I didn't even struggle. I mean, again, my son had a severe reflux. Again, I think I assisted with that situation a little bit. But in the same breath, I didn't have, I mean, I know friends that really struggle to breastfeed. I also have a friend whose son had severe, like, cow's milk allergy problems. So,
Yeah.
and these are like, and then it's hectic to deal with as well. So I didn't even have such issues, and yet I still stressed about it. And going to a nurse really, it made such a huge difference. And again, we've
Yes.
said this, I think we say this almost weekly, where we're saying, like, it is just so helpful when a nurse knows the norms.
Yes, Definitely. And I do think it also assists with just calming down a little bit, because we've seen a lot of parents changing milks every 3 days because it's not working. And just to go back to the basics and just calm them down a little bit and just get one thing that works for you. And then we take the next step. And I think that's very important, because we do get a little bit frantic. We are in charge of their little lives, so we are worried. And just that outside opinion from a nurse really helps us to put things into perspective.
And I mean, when you go like for a 6 week checkup, for instance, what is kind of the standard things that you guys check?
So we do check the height, the weight, and we also do something called MUAC, which is the upper arm circumference, which is sometimes a very good indicator of whether they're also picking up weight, if there's any feeding issues, which really helps us a lot. Then we also check milestones, because there would usually be a milestone delay as well if there is a bit of feeding problems, because they need all their energy to achieve their milestones as well. So there's a lot of things we check. Check the feeding, and what they are currently feeding. How's it going with the mom? Because that's also important. And then there's a lot of health education involved. So it's not a quick visit and just a jab that some people think, but it's much more comprehensive than that.
Yeah, and I mean, I do think I do also know that you guys go into a little bit more detail as well, when there's specific issues that need to be dealt with,
Definitely. And
like a
luckily,
breastfeeding.
Yes, and we are now breastfeeding specialists, lactation consultants, which really helps if we need to sit there with the mom to assist her with breastfeeding. That helps a lot. And we also have a great referral system where we can go to the next person in the line to assist us as well.
As always, Lizelle, it was wonderful having you. Have a wonderful week. I'll speak to you next
Thank
week.
you, Lani. Have a great day.
You
Bye.
too.
This is Bump and Beyond with Yolandi Becker, the show about pregnancy and babies. 101.9 megahertz of life.
Yes, if you've just joined me, you are on 101.9 High FM, and this is Bump and Beyond with me, your host, Yolandi Becker, and you've missed my show. It's not the end of the world, luckily for you, because this show and all of my shows you can listen to as a podcast on highfm.com. And today we spoke about common feeding issues with small infant babies, things like constipation, reflux, intolerances, and it is a common situation. And I want to just encourage you to, or to remind you, and I started the show with this comment to say that keep in mind, and I've had some issues, not serious issues, but I did have some struggling issues with my children also. I mean, not even talking when they're toddlers and picky eaters. And now they are great eaters. They love my food, and meal times are a whole event in our household. And I want you to keep that in mind, that there is a light at the end of the tunnel, if that's all that it is. But it is a long game, and it might feel, when you're in it, really, really hard. But I think one thing that stands out from our conversation is that while the feeding struggles can be incredibly challenging, parents don't have to navigate them alone. Understanding what is normal and recognizing when additional support may be needed and seeking guidance from a trusted healthcare professional can make a significant difference for you and your baby. So, to all the parents listening, if you're currently dealing with reflux or colic or constipation, or simply just wondering what you're experiencing is normal or not. No, many families have walked this. That's why we can make a whole show about it. Trust your instincts, ask questions, and don't be afraid to ask for help. Thank you so much for joining me today. And remember, parenting isn't about perfection. It's about learning, or wanting to learn. You need to learn. I'm definitely know a lot more than 14 years ago. It's about growing, finding out what works for your family, and what works now might not work in 2 years' time, might not work in 5 years' time, and that's also okay. Nothing you decide is set in stone. In stone. Take what resonates, leave what doesn't. Until next time, let's go out there and be kind to one another and to each other. Have a wonderful day.